And the Lord said, "It is not good that man should be alone. I will make him a helper comparable to him. Out of the ground the Lord God formed every beast of the field and every bird of the air and brought them to Adam to see what he would call them. And whatever Adam called each living creature, that was its name. So Adam gave the names to all the cattle, to the birds of the air, and to every beast of the field. But Adam there was not found a helper comparable to him. And the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall on Adam, and he slept. He took one of his ribs and closed up the flesh in its place. And the rib which the Lord God had taken from man, he made into a woman, and he brought her to the man. And Adam said, 'This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, because she was taken out of man.' There was therefore a man shall leave his father and his mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. And they were both naked, the man and his wife, and were not ashamed."
Well, before I get started in the lesson, let me offer some words of appreciation. If this has been good for you this weekend, these times we've had to be together, let the shepherds of this congregation know that. Let Terry and Adam know that, because they've all had a part in planning this and making it happen and in corresponding with me. And Terry and I have been corresponding now for a couple of years about this, a few years about this, and the shepherds have been good to work with us on what might work and might not work in the setting that we've had. If there's been any problem at all, it's been on my part in having too much material to try to present in the period of time that we've tried to present it. And I'm sorry I've pushed your time constraints somewhat. I don't like to do that, but I'm thankful that you've been gracious to allow that to happen. I'm very thankful that my wife has been able to be here. You ladies have gotten to hear Paula a couple of times, and I think her wisdom and her knowledge of the word is great, and I think that God has blessed her with the ability to communicate that, and I hope that that's been your blessing. And be gentle with your men. They've had to listen to me for 5 straight hours. They've got no breaks at all. They're ready to scream and run out of this place with this last hour. So be kind to the men, will you? Say, "I know it's been tough, honey, but it's over now. You know, it's over." You don't have to hear that man's voice for a long time, maybe never again. It has been good for us to be with you and to share these things that I think are important to us in our marriages. You've heard the passage that was cited in Genesis twice this morning for the readings, and that's been by intent because I wanted to really nail this down. This is where we've been in Genesis. And in this last lesson, I simply want to cover the last 2 concepts. We've talked about leaving parent authority, and we've talked about cleaving to our husbands and wives. Now I would like to look with you briefly in this period at the statement, "They shall become one flesh, and the man and his wife were both naked and were not ashamed." I want to look at those 2 concepts, one flesh and the idea of nakedness and unashamedly naked. We want to talk about unity and surrender in this particular lesson. One flesh. What does that mean? Well, we're immediately drawn to, I think, a very simplistic explanation of what it means to become one flesh. And we may think, and I believe erroneously, that when we talk about the one flesh, we're talking about simply the sexual union between a man and his wife. I don't believe that that's what's the sum total of what's being discussed here in this passage. I think the one flesh goes well beyond that. There are couples who have no sexual interaction with each other, and they're still happily married, and I believe they are becoming one flesh. What does it mean to become one flesh? Well, let me use an example. I was at a camp one time, and it was a camp for adults. And at that camp, we were trying to learn how to get along with each other and how to work together and how we all have different strengths and weaknesses, and those all play into it. So when we came to lunch one day, As we came in the door, we were all given a bandana. And then as we sat down at the table, some of the people who were in charge came around and they strapped our arms to the person next to us with those bandanas, tied our arms together. So on both sides of me, I was connected to the arms of the people with me. And all the way around the table, everybody was connected before we ate. And then the food was brought in and put in front of us. And we were told, dig in. And the first inclination was, I'm stronger than the lady next to me. I'll eat first and then let her go. But it got really difficult, particularly with soup, because all she had to do was, just before I got it to my mouth, just a little tug and I was messed up. So we started working together. I'd say, your turn, and she'd take a bite of soup, and I would take it, and then my turn, and then I'd get some soup, and we learned how to cut meat. And we learned how to share bread and butter rolls and all those things. We had to learn how to do that. We weren't good at it, but we learned. And I think that's what happens with the one flesh. They shall, listen to the wording. Not they shall be one flesh, they shall become one flesh. They'll become one flesh. What are we talking about when we talk about becoming one flesh? It is not just a matter of the preacher says you're married and it's done. There is a sense in which it's done. You have become a unit, but you're going to have to learn how to become an effective unit together. Men and women are different. And sometimes that can become frustrating to us. And we can say, well, I wish my wife were more like I was. Wish she thought more like I think. Or she may say, I wish my husband thought more like I think. But we're different for reasons. And unlike the situation I just mentioned to you about the eating together with our arms strapped, there is no residual benefit in that. It was a fun exercise. We learned how to cooperate, but nobody went away from there saying, you know, I think if my hand were tied to other people every time I ate, there would be an advantage. Well, there might be. I'd lose weight. But there'd be no real advantage to eating that way. There's no strength that comes from it or a dexterity that comes from it. The food doesn't taste better because it's shared in that way. But that's not true in the marriage relationship. In the marriage relationship, two individual units join themselves together and they become more than the sum of their parts. It's not one plus one becomes two. It almost is one plus one becomes three or four or five. I have no doubt at all in my mind that if I had never married anybody in my life, I would serve the Lord. And I think I would be an effective servant of the Lord. But I would in no way be able to serve the Lord to the degree that I'm able to serve Him now because of my wife. I know that. She brings to my life and to our marriage resources and capabilities and experiences and knowledge that I don't have. And some of that comes because she's a woman. And some of that comes because she's just grown up differently than I have. And she has skills that I don't have. And resources I haven't had. And now they are mine because we have become one unit. And I think she would say the same thing is true from her standpoint. So when God says, take these two individual units, here's Adam, here's Eve, it is more than just, he's a lonely guy, find somebody for him that'll make him happy. It is find someone who can make him better and more rounded in life, more successful than he could ever be on his own. Ever. And we sometimes misunderstand that. I think we men misunderstand that. There's stories told about Pete Flaherty. Pete was the mayor of Philadelphia, and he married a woman named Nancy. And on one occasion, as he was coming out from a speech he was giving somewhere, he and Nancy got ready to get in the car, and a construction worker, across the street hollered out, "Nancy!" And she waved and said, "Hang on, Pete." And she went across the street, talked to the guy for a while, animatedly came back over. He said, "Who was that?" She said, "That was a guy I dated in high school. I haven't seen him since then." And Mayor Pete Flaherty said, "Just think about it." He said, "If you'd married him, you'd be married to a construction worker." And she said, "No, Pete, if I'd married him, he'd be mayor of Philadelphia." You know, maybe we miss that, you know? Maybe we miss that. Maybe it's not a matter of you're so lucky to be married to me, but I'm lucky to be married to you. You've made me what I am. And there are a lot of women and men here who'd say, "I don't want that credit. I don't want that. I didn't make you what you are. You did that all on your own. I'm just here to clean up the mess." But we become one flesh. Listen to the wording again. They shall become one flesh. So we're talking about something that is a process. Now, 1 Corinthians chapter 6, there's that statement made that when a man is joined to a harlot, he becomes one body with her, for the two shall become one flesh. And I think we misunderstand that. We find a simplistic explanation for that that's not right. Because it's not saying that the one body relationship with a harlot is the same as the one flesh relationship. It is saying you can't have a sexual relationship with a woman whom you have no connection with other than the sexual relationship without damaging the one flesh relationship you have committed yourself to with your mate. And the reason I know that is because Jesus talks about that in Matthew chapter 19 when he says, "And the two shall become one flesh, and what God has joined together, let no man separate." He's not talking about the sexual union there. Clearly not. He's talking about a unity of heart and soul and mind, the merger of two units into one unit. Now, what does that take? Well, let's go back to our illustration. What did it take for us tied together at a table to be able to eat? We had to work together, and that meant I had to surrender. Every bite couldn't go into my mouth. There were times when we had to pick up the fork and go the other way, and go this way. There were times when I'd stick something and it looked really good. We'd stick something in food and it went into somebody else's mouth besides mine. But I had to learn to do that if I was going to work together in that situation. You know, that's true in my relationship with Jesus. We're married to Jesus. We're married to him. It's talked about that way in Ephesians chapter 5. In fact, all of marriage is meant to reflect the greater union we have with our Lord Jesus Christ. And what is said about that relationship? You remember what Jesus said? May I paraphrase it this way? If you want to be married to me, you must give up all your possessions. Did Jesus say that? He absolutely said that. He said that in Luke chapter 14, verse 33. He said we must deny ourselves. We must deny ourselves. We have to give up something. We have to give up what we are and what we have. And you may say, "Well, where's the other side of that?" Hey, we just celebrated that. I'm married to a being who gave up everything for me. I just celebrated that. And he asked me to do the same thing. In my marriage, what was mine becomes ours. And what was hers becomes ours. And there is very little that remains, if anything at all, that I can call mine anymore. And I have to learn to live that way in my marital relationship. I have to learn to surrender what is mine. That means sometimes I eat things I'm not happy about, but I eat them because they make my wife really happy. And if it makes her happy, it makes me happy. And there are times when we do things that she doesn't like to do, but she does them because that makes me happy. And she wants to make me happy. And when I'm happy, she's happy. And there are times we both give up things we want in order to achieve something better for both of us. And that's what marriage is. It is give and take. It is constantly thinking about the mate and how it works together. Those arms are tied together. If we're going to eat and not starve, we've got to learn how to work together in that situation. But let me tell you one more thing about that before we move to our last point. We also have to learn not only to give up what was ours for our mates, but we also have to learn how to take what belonged to our mates and accept it as ours. And that's not always easy to do. Because while we've said very clearly in the first lesson in this series that we have to leave father and mother, you never leave the influence of your family. You never leave that. It's always there. To a large degree, I'm the kind of man in my marriage that I saw modeled in the marriage of my father and my mother. Now, I have the added advantage that some of you don't have of having been raised by a man and a woman who served the Lord from the time I was born, even before that. And so they were doing what they did as parents because they thought that's what God wanted them to do. Not all of you have had that benefit. But we're all influenced, whether that was the case or not. We're influenced by our parents. It may be the opposite. It might be, I'll never be the mother my mother was. I don't want to be. It was a horrible situation. Or I'll never be that father. I'm going to be the opposite of that. But we are what we are largely by the influence of our families. And my wife has to accept that. And that may mean that we have difficulty with some things because my wife may have come from a family where her dad did everything that had to do with physical repairs and taking care of things and changing the oil in the cars and all that. And I may have come from a family where that was equally shared. And I may be saying to my wife, hey, I need some help with this. And she's saying, it's not the way it works. That's your job. Or you take the outside, I'll take the inside of the house. And yet the other person may say, well, no, that's not the way it worked in my family. My dad always mopped the floors. He liked doing that. And those kinds of things have to be worked out. Those family ties influence us in our marriage relationship. So while it's true that you married your wife or your husband, you didn't marry the families, in a secondary sense, you did. And that may be bad news for you. But you did. Because you married the influence of those people. Because we all have that to some degree or another. And so traditions are different. Hey, we're a family that does great traditions. Man, when it comes 4th of July, we go all out. We spend thousands of dollars on fireworks. And somebody else says, nope, not in our family. We didn't do traditions. That just wasn't much. So throw me a hot dog in a boiler and I'm done. Well, you better work that out. You better learn how to work through that. And that may take an arbitrator, a mediator, or an undertaker. But you better find some way to work that out. Because we're different in those situations, and those are our preconceptions and our roles, how we view ourselves. That's true. And let me tell you one more. It's children. I have to be careful. I don't say I, like me personally, as much as I representing all of us. I have to be careful as a spouse in a marriage not to take the children when I want them and leave them with my spouse when I don't. And that's not just talk. I'm not just talking about the physical care of them. I'm talking about sharing the responsibilities for children at all times. You ever notice how sometimes you come home from work and your spouse says, would you go talk to your children? They've been terrible today. And you wonder, why did they become mine then? You know, were they mimicking what I do? Then I could understand that they're my children. But they shouldn't be mine just when they're bad, nor should it be when they get some kind of award or reward or some kind of recognition that that's my boy, not our boy, my boy, or that's my girl. We've got to be careful about that and learn. Again, we're tied together. We share that. So they're mine when they're bad. They're mine when they're good. And they're Paula's all the time. So we have to share those things in our life. All right, let me go to one last point with you, and that's this final point. And I find it really intriguing. I love this little passage, just these little two verses that it's like God said, I'm going to plant this incredible explosion underground in this little box, and it's going to go off and it's going to influence the whole world. These four concepts: leave, cleave, one flesh, and then this. And they were both naked and unashamed. And they were both naked and unashamed. And you look at that and you think, well, why is that mentioned? There should be a sense in which, well, of course they were. Does anybody say, oh, I was there at the birth of my child, and it was unbelievable. I mean, the doctor delivered this little girl, and here she was naked. Well, of course she is. She didn't come out with little pink booties on, you know. I'm a girl, here I come. It's not that way. She didn't have a little bow, and no little boy has a bow tie. I knew he was so cute when he came out, a little checkered bow tie he had on. That's not going to happen. How do they come? They come naked. Well, how was Adam created? He was created naked. Now, we might have made an assumption, well, God wasn't going to leave him that way. He put some clothes on, Adam, would you please? It didn't do that. He's naked. And when he brings a woman to him, she's naked. And they're looking at each other naked. And it's clear that it doesn't say, and she said, oh, I'm embarrassed, I got to get something on. And he didn't say that. It says that for a reason. It's not just, oh, and by the way, isn't this curious? There's something being said here. What's being said? Why is it stressed they were both naked and both unashamed? And I would suggest to you there are a couple of things about that. First of all, I don't know how long they were in that state. You know, and I have wondered about that. That gets a little awkward for me mentally, but I don't know how long they were in that state, because we read the text and you come to the end of chapter 2 and you've got this, they were both naked and unashamed. Then chapter 3, immediately you've got Eve coming up to the tree and the serpent saying, doesn't that look good? Don't you think that tastes good? That'll make you smart as God. And she eats it. And then they both go, oh, I'm naked. And they put on fig leaves and the clothing starts. Fashion starts. But we don't have any idea how long it was between chapter 2 and chapter 3. It doesn't say in the very next day. In fact, I'm convinced that they went a long time before she ever ate of that tree. They walked past that tree day after day and said, don't touch that. That's not good. Don't do that. I'm going to tell you why. Because they had to have been in the garden long enough that all the things that are cursed about them are a reversal of what they had experienced. They had experienced work without sweating. Otherwise, how would they know it's a curse to sweat if they've never done it? And how would they know what it's like to till the ground without thorns and thistles if they hadn't had time to do that and say, oh, this is wonderful, isn't it? And then the thorns and thistles come. So it seems to me that they were perhaps days, weeks, months, maybe years in that garden before she plucked that fruit and ate it. And then they realized they were naked. So what I'm saying is they may have gone a long time walking around naked. And you may say, well, that's so indecent. No, it wasn't. You know why it wasn't indecent? Is it indecent when little babies run around naked? You ever notice that? Little babies, they just shed their clothes and run around. We don't all go, this is horrible. Get that kid some clothes. He's naked. What is he, perverted or something? No little child is. They're not. Why not? Because they have innocent minds. They don't think anything of it. In fact, the only reason they laugh about it is because we do. You know, they wouldn't think anything of it being without clothes. Little babies don't lay there naked and say, would you please get something for me here? feeling very exposed right now. Give me a blanket or something. They don't do that. They don't do that. Why not? Because they don't think of it that way. And I'm going to tell you, that's what sin does. That's what sin does. Sin takes things that are really clean and wholesome and pure and makes them really ugly. So sin takes the sexual relationship that God intended man and woman to have, and it makes it really nasty and dirty. And sin takes words that we use to help each other, and it makes them hurtful words. Sin takes our sense of possession of what we have, and it busts it up as people steal from us, or we steal from them. That's what sin does. So when sin came, and they ate the fruit, and they realized what they had done, I don't think it was a matter of the fruit says, you know, oh, we're naked. Oh, I didn't know it till I just bit. Don't bite. You know, I don't think it's that. But I think that when they realized we've violated God's will and they looked at each other and they said, we're naked. And they took fig leaves and they covered their privacy from each other, from each other. And sin does that. So I want you to think about this, the state of being naked and unashamed and what it might say to us in our marriage, and then we'll close the lesson. Notice what they're doing, first of all. They're naked and unashamed. They are transparent. They're not hiding anything. There's nothing hidden. Is your marriage that way? I mean, is there virtually nothing hidden? I don't mean to say by that you have to share every thought you've ever had. In fact, I say that can be very dangerous. I'm reminded of that Geico commercial with Honest Abe and his wife's broad, and she's saying, does this make me look fat? You know, listen, men, when your wife asks that question, does this make me look fat? Just pray you'll die before you have to answer it. I don't think you have to share everything. That's true for women too. You know, I got to tell you this. I'm going to tell you this. I got a haircut recently, and I'm telling you, man, the barber was in a bad mood or something, because he just butchered me. It was awful. I knew it when I got in the car. I mean, it was awful. It was the worst haircut I think I've had ever. And I came home and I said, Paula came in and said, oh, you got a haircut. That's all she said. And I said, oh, it's terrible. She goes, no, it's not that bad. You know, it made it manageable. I thought, well, maybe it's not as bad as I thought it was. She said, it's getting longer. It's coming out. It's getting okay. You know, she'd say that every couple of days. And I thought, okay, I can live with this. I don't need to. And then she said to somebody recently, they said, Ralph looks like he needs a haircut. She said, he's letting it grow out so he can do something else with it, because, man, he got the worst haircut he's ever had. I heard, she said, I almost told him, preach in a hat, you know. But see, she didn't tell me at the time. She said, nah, that's not bad. That's okay. It's all right. You know? And I think you don't have to tell everything to be transparent. You don't have to tell everything. But you do need to be open. You need to be open to your mate. You need to share life and what's good and what's bad about your life with your mate. Secondly, they were sharing their most significant differences openly. You notice that? I mean, what are the biggest differences between a man and a woman? It's the way they look physically. And they're sharing that with each other. They see that. Immediately they see how different they are. And they're unashamed of that. You know, and I'm going to tell you this. And I want to say this more to the women than the men, because men often say about women, I don't understand. I don't understand my wife. I told a young guy one time, I said, because there's only two times in your life when you won't understand your wife: before you marry her and after you marry her. But we men kind of acknowledge that women seem to be complex to us. But women, on the other hand, seem to feel like, in many cases, as I hear it from women, that men are just kind of simple machines. I mean, they're pretty simple, almost primitive. Neanderthal knuckle draggers, lowbrows. And I'm going to tell you something. Men, women, you better appreciate the differences that we have. Because men bring something to a marriage no woman could ever bring another woman. A man brings to a marriage. Women have great friends. But I'm going to tell you something. You would not want to be married to your best friend, women. All you need to do is work in a workplace where it's all women for a short period of time, like my wife has, and she said, I don't want to work with women. It's difficult. I've watched boys beat each other physically in a dorm room boxing, and that's brutal. But I've never seen the brutality that a group of women can perform on someone they don't like verbally. It's brutal. Women are not better than men, and men are not better than women, but we're very different. And we need to appreciate the differences. I need the differences that Paula brings. I don't need to throw my hands up in the air and say, why in the world did you make her like that, God? Why can't she be like me? If she was like me, I'd kill me. I need those differences. Men and women are like, it's like this. It's like she brings this and I bring this to the relationship. And when we put those together, there's, and it's done right, there's an incredible merging that creates this unit. Naked and unashamed means I'm not afraid to bring those differences to the table. I don't want to look like her. I don't want to think like her. I don't want to be her. I want to be her compatible partner. And that's what woman was made for. A helper, meet or compatible for him. Not this, not banging into each other, but merging together. Celebrate the differences. Symbolically speaking, be naked and unashamed. And finally, sharing in unhindered intimacy. You know, we shouldn't be ashamed of that relationship in any way, shape, or form. We should celebrate it. I'm not talking now about physical nakedness. I'm talking about sharing the intimacy that I have with my wife on every level, spiritually, socially, physically, mentally, emotionally, sharing in every way. But sin disrupts that. It did in the garden. It took that beautiful relationship in which this grown man and grown woman looked like small children cavorting about naked and not even thinking about what that might look like or feel like. And they're doing that day after day, and they're perfectly content. And then sin made it dirty. I've watched young couples come to the altar as I've perform their wedding ceremonies, and they come saying, this is so great, this is so beautiful, this person and I, we're going to be happy for the rest of our lives. Every day we're going to sing songs and give thanks and smile and love each other. And I say, that can happen for you, but know that sin will always disrupt that, always. So you want the kind of relationship that we've talked about? Leave your father and mother. Cleave to your wife or husband. Become one flesh. And be naked and unashamed with each other. And you'll have the kind of marriage that was literally made in heaven. And then that leads me to this by way of invitation to you this morning. You want that kind of relationship with God and with Jesus? Because he says, here's what Jesus says, I'm willing. I am willing for you to become my mate. I'm willing to live together with you for eternity. But what that requires of us is that we bring our sinful lives and let him transform us. How do we do that? Give up everything. Give up what you are. Give up what you have and be willing to take on what the Savior of the world wants to do with your life. If there's a way we can help you do that this morning, I invite you to come be married to the Son of God. Give your life to him. Come right now while we stand and sing this song.